enjoy a good squeeze.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm Margo.
And I'm August.
And this is A Good Squeeze.
The show where we squeeze a little bit of that James Bond into our everyday lives.
That's right. And today's another special episode. We're just spoiling you guys with special episodes.
We're going to turn the page to something a little different. Excuse the pun. We're talking books. We're talking authors. We're talking, hey, Terrence Lehew of Suit Up Author. He is an author. He is a podcaster. He's a creator. Swashbuckler and a fellow Golden Bullet nominee.
That's right.
Hey, Terrence, welcome to A Good Squeeze.
Thank you, August, Margo. I'm happy to be here. That's right. Golden Bullet nominations. If I was not up against Jack Carr, I think that I might have had a chance, but at least I was in great company.
That's what we say too.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're in that nominee category because we're in great company.
That's
certainly.
Right. That's
certainly.
Why we have to say, no, I'm joking. No. It's an honor and a privilege.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. And yes, thank you once again for coming on the show. Terrence, like I mentioned, is an author and he's got a new book coming out very, very soon, at least at the time of this release. It's called Thorn. And it's coming out March 10th.
March 10th. Thorn, my swashbuckling romance set during the Wars of the Roses.
Ooh.
That's sumptuous, as I want to say. I don't know if it is or not, but
when he
the mouthfeel of words.
Yes, it melts in your mouth. When he first told me that title, I was like, that's dirty talk. Like, you can't say that. Children are listening. Like, that's it melts in your mouth. Could you just give us here's the thing. If our listeners know us, they know you. That's a guarantee. But we'd love it if you could just give us a bit of an introduction, just a little bit of a, how did you get to writing? This is your how manyth novel?
Oh, dear. This is book, I'm counting on my fingers. Huh? I think it's like book 5.
How did Thorn come about? You know, how did you decide, you know, from going from things like romantic comedies or mm-hmm. or pulpy adventure, you know, action stories, a medieval, you know, Robin Hood-esque, Zorro-esque mm-hmm. story. How did that come about?
It's more natural than you'd think, because the thing about writing rom-coms, and yes, I wrote 2 of them, both of them terribly not unsuccessful. But the thing that works with rom-coms is you learn dialogue. You learn character chemistry. Ooh. And those are the 2 things I like to think I really enjoy. I really love that stuff. I grew up, my favorite, like one of my keystone movies is The Mask of Zorro, which crackles with sexual tension and chemistry between every member of the cast. So I like those types of stories, mm-hmm. and I've always loved those types of stories. And really, the Mark Zorro, Robin Hood, these are pulpy adventure stories. The first Zorro novel was a novelization in the old pulp magazines that then became a book, which then became adapted countless times. I wanted to write my take on it. And I love the War of the Roses, like just as an era of British history. Mm. So I had read a couple of books about the history and was like, ooh, it's a time of change. It's like the end of the medieval era. So I wanted to do something that took advantage of this is a time of change. You can do like at that time, their like pop culture icon was Robin Hood. So it was fun to like, I didn't get to weave the joke in, but like I had a whole thing in my mind where this random person would be like, no, I need Lincoln green, specifically a doublet of Lincoln green, because that's what Robin Hood wears. It didn't quite make the final cut, but I wanted to create something that kind of evoked that era and time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had your pulp hero of Robin Hood and maybe your pulp villain of Richard III or something.
No, Richard was a good guy, wasn't he?
No.
Prince John.
King Richard I, Richard the Lionheart. Richard III is the hunchback that we get from Shakespeare, which is okay. This is the nerdy part about writing Thorn. I was working on 3 different levels. There's what we understand of just general medieval history, the average person. The problem is that time period itself is like just pre-Renaissance. So it's even like the end of what we think of with knights in armor. And then all most of us know about the Wars of the Roses in terms of pop culture is filtered through Shakespeare, which is then Elizabethan.
Oh.
So, and then I'm trying to write it in a pulp style. So I am trying to layer like three different types of dialogue style and descriptions of place and time. And I don't know how successful I was, but I was really intentionally working with that.
Did you find that to be like a challenge in comparison to some of your previous writings where you do indeed are writing within a time period? I'm thinking of, you know, your Mitch Mayhew stories in the 1920s. Dialogue's a little different than maybe modern time, but going this deep with it, did you find that challenging?
So Thorn has been my most challenging book. I'll just be straight honest. I've written it, like, I literally rewrote the first 7,000 words four times. It took five rewrites to get to the point where I could actually finish it, and just the right piece clicked, and I finally was able to write it. I was working on this long before I was working on Mitch Mayhew.
Wow. Okay.
So like this has been in the pipeline for so long. I was so glad to finally get finished.
That's amazing.
But the specifically the dialogue part of what always been a hang up for me is how accurate do I try making it? Because yeah, they didn't talk like we talk. They didn't even talk like they talked in Shakespeare's time. Mm-hmm. So what was the correct way to work with the language? I decided to just stick with as much vernacular and get rid of any contractions. So get rid of it's, get rid of that's, get rid of anything that had that apostrophe to it, unless it was a possessive.
Okay.
Fascinating.
Well, in terms of that, because I've never heard of anyone try this before, combining all three, you said three, recent pulp, medieval, and what was the third one?
Shakespearean.
What was your point of reference? Like, how did you find a way to like, was it a lot of cutting and putting things together? Is it like, where do you find the middle point? Like, what was your reference and how did you like start, not to reveal too much about the book until people read it, but what was that method that you used to get that?
I read books on the time period is the main thing. But then also I went back and I watched some like filmed productions of Richard III to try getting, this is the cadence, this is the conversation. And I didn't try to mimic Shakespearean language one for one, because I think, again, that is still difficult for people to get. Actually, a major part for me in what turned into this was reading Ivanhoe by Sir Walter Scott, which is, for those who don't know, it's one of like the, Sir Walter Scott was a contemporary of Jane Austen, who wrote like Pride and Prejudice, et cetera, et cetera. He wrote adventure stories in that era and time, pulling from history. And Ivanhoe is the story of a disinherited knight. It is he's a masked hero as a knight. And that was part of like my idea in trying to create Thorn was, okay, he's a masked hero, but the mask is he's just wearing a helmet.
Ah, that's so cool. Oh,
and so I was trying to have that kind of dialogue that Ivanhoe has, where it's verily, and throw in a few words like that, but still keep it enough within our own time to recognize the sentence structure.
It's just the way that you're talking about it. It feels like not all of it is happening so authentically. Even you just saying it's a masked hero, but it's a knight, he's wearing a helmet. Like, oh my God, of course, that totally makes sense. Like there's such a natural, authentic way of how you're like discussing this. And from what August has told me, so I just learned how to read yesterday. So I still have to read your books. So I apologize. but August is, you know, he's telling me about your books and the stories and everything. And it seems to come very naturally for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I love stories. And I talked about this on a recent episode with, L.S. Goodish. He's one of the founders of Veritas Entertainment. They're the publisher for Thorn and the Mitch Mayhew books. It's easy to repeat and regurgitate stuff you've already gotten. So like if I was to just, I could potentially regurgitate Zorro, just throw a different name on him, different place, give him a sword, let go. Synthesis is what we get when we get like Indiana Jones and Star Wars, where it's all of these different concepts that create something new. even though it's in a familiar genre type. Because before Star Wars, we had Flash Gordon. We had the adventure space opera serials. Before Indiana Jones, we had Secret of the Incas. We had Al Colby. We had all these adventure type heroes that were similar to Indiana Jones, but Indiana Jones became the completion of pulling from all that stuff and creating something new.
Yeah.
I want to do that with Thorne intentionally.
Love that. Like the antithesis of all these things just kind of funneled into this perfect organism.
Are you a trailblazer? Are you inventing something right now? Like, I mean it. I'm actually asking.
I sincerely hope not. There's a phrase from Shark Tank, which is like the only reality TV show that I will binge.
Sure.
Because it's just straight business and numbers. And it's fantastic.
Yeah.
But pioneers end up with arrows in their backs. You want to be the person after them.
Oh, sure. That makes sense.
I said the funnel. So he's not the pioneer, you know, but he's leading the charge.
I always say it's not about who did it first. It's about who did it best. So, yes. So you're going to do it best.
Thank you.
I've never heard of this concept before. So I'm like, oh, this is like brand new to me. And I hope more people feel that way, where it's like, because I feel like everything's been done a million times, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. People gravitate towards what they like because they like the consistency and all that. But if you're bringing out something that people have just never seen before, that's a wonderful thing. You're adding to our framework of entertainment and our framework of how we consume media. And that's, you know, I'm so excited to see, one, what you do with it, but what other people do with it. Mm-hmm. How is this going to get extended and all that? So I keep hitting my mic.
I'll tell you this, you know, on this show, novice and nostalgic, as far as literature goes, you, Terrence, you're the nostalgic in this situation. And Margo and I, we're novices. I love the idea of reading, and I wish I did it more. And I've actively made more of an effort to read more in my life. I tend to read maybe like 2 to 3 books a year, maybe. And every year I'm like, I'm gonna read 12 books this year. I only read 2 or 3. But this year, we're in February already, and I made this little plan. I'm gonna read 20 pages of a book a day. And I've already read 4 books.
Congratulations.
Books.
That's awesome.
But don't congratulate me. Congratulations to you, because it was your books that got me reading again.
I can vouch for that.
It was Unwanted Passengers, Diamonds in Denver. It was One Man's Treasure. And I was like, I just kept reading. And then I picked up The Shadow, like a volume of The Shadow. Mm-hmm. I put that down as soon as you sent me a wonderful, you know, draft of Thorne. So Shadow's on the back burner, Thorne's on getting hot and cooking here. But
I appreciate that.
I appreciate you, because I have enjoyed your writing so much, and it's been so fun. And then, you know, through my, is novicity a word?
Nope.
Noviceness?
Sorry.
Nova Scotia?
Nova Scotia.
That's where I feel like I'm from, because I'm a novice when it comes to I can read, but I've enjoyed your podcast so much.
Thank you.
Because you feature other authors, you know, like Margo was kind of saying, like, you know, just people you've never heard of, or I've never heard of, doesn't mean they're not heard of. But it's like opened my eyes to all these different books out there. And, you know, just like the idea of like Western pulp novels or even pulp fiction novels about like boxing. Things like that. I'm just like, man, I want to read all these. And it's been really like inspiring to read more, but also to write. You know, I've and Margo too, but we always have stories we want to tell. I went to school for like filmmaking and media, and I was always making movies, so I wrote a lot of scripts. But I've always wanted to write a book, and I've started and stopped a million times. But listening to your show, reading your books, I'm like, maybe I should write something.
Yeah. And it's also just the testament to how, like, the way that you frame and welcome people into the space. Because there's so many opportunities where, or not opportunities, but so many times, like, you've heard about somebody writing a book or doing this and that. It's almost deterred you from doing so. you've opened up a well of inspiration, Terrence, that is just hasn't been there for a while. And it wasn't until he started reading your books that it's not a, oh, well, if he can do it, so can I. It's not that at all. No, by no means is it that, because I hate it when people feel that way. And I'm like, no.
I understand.
You know, yeah.
There are some books that I pick up and I'm like, this, if it's a bad book, I'm like, I don't want to write, because clearly I can't write better than this horrible thing that I've read. Or there are other books I read that I'm like, I sat down, I'm like, I feel inspired.
Yes.
Like, and I think that good literature can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not to say that mine is good literature.
Yes, it is.
If it does inspire you, I'm happy. But that.
No, you heard it here first. It's good literature.
Good.
No, first, not first, but you heard it here. So.
Okay. I also have to give you guys huge kudos, because I think that you guys have done a similar thing with A Good Squeeze, where it is a delightful podcast. There are a lot of James Bond podcasts out there. I'll tell you what, I listen to only a fraction of them because there's only so much time. But your guys' podcast is infinitely entertaining, and your guys' chemistry makes this show phenomenal to listen to.
You're so sweet. Thank you for saying that's so kind of you, truly. It means a lot coming from you too, because of the impact you've had on, you know, on the podcasting scene and on, you know, just aspiring artists and authors, as you said. Like, it really does mean something. It's, you know, you can tell, how do I say this, when someone is in it for the love of the game and not for the game. And so it means a lot. So thank you so much for that. I did have a question for you, though, in terms of, and I keep trampling on all your questions, August. No, I apologize. A lot of the stories that you tackle explore the sense of adventure. And I feel like this is something we cultivate, our sense of adventure, early in childhood. And, you know, that's when it pretty much reaches a peak, and it tends to kind of fizzle out in middle childhood, and then it sometimes gets lost in adulthood. How much of that childhood adventure have you taken and rebirthed into your novels, into your stories, even in the ones that you haven't written yet? How much of that childlike wonder and a sense of adventure is in there, if you don't mind me asking?
No, I think that's a great question, because, so I'm a big fan of, there's a writer named Robert Greene, and he's written a lot of phenomenal tomes, treatises, really, upon different subjects. One of them is called Mastery. And the whole point is discovering what it is that you want to become a master of, because that's one of those things that genuinely brings so much to life. And I discovered at an early age, I love stories. And so weaving my way through life and into adulthood, I always knew I wanted to be a storyteller in some form or fashion. I was creating elaborate storylines with my Legos and action figures to the point that those were the things that were more interesting to me than the actual, like, building of a set. I enjoy building the sets, but creating the narrative long running with my characters mattered more. And so, like, I grew up playing with my friends, going, okay, you're this character, you're that character. And I created narratives. I didn't realize that at the time, but that's eventually what I would start doing on the page.
That's amazing. You were that kid on the playground. You were like, guys, I got this figured out. And then the big monster comes, and, like, you were the one that all the other kids were following, and you were the storyteller, the dungeon master, the guy.
I still want a dungeon master. I still haven't done it yet. I'm always like, my wife has played D&D before I have, which I find absolutely mind-boggling.
That's so funny,
But I think it would be so much fun.
You'd be so good at it.
It's kind of, is it ironic or fortuitous?
Serendipitous.
Tomorrow, we are playing Dungeons & Dragons for the first time ever. Tomorrow.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
I hope that we get to gain it, or like we both kind of build our D&D skills separately. And then when we meet, maybe potentially we could start a campaign together. Again, this is preemptive because we haven't even started playing, so we don't know what we're talking about. But yes, no, I love that you were always, that it sounds like you were always the instigator for that storytelling. And I feel like, again, look at your influence on other children and how you cater that storytelling for other people too. That's in you. That's full circle.
Yeah.
No? I love doing it.
That's wonderful.
I was curious, you know, early memories of like reading books, and you were just talking about how you always like loved stories. Do you remember some of like those early books that really, or just, not even books, but stories in general that really inspired you and that were some of your favorites during your like more formidable years that ultimately led to you being like, hey, I want to start writing this stuff. I want to contribute.
I am a big Sherlock Holmes fan. As a kid, I got the audiobooks and I would listen to them over and over and over again. The other thing was, have you guys ever seen, they were called great, I think they still exist, Great Illustrated Classic Editions?
Oh. I think so, yeah. I'd have to see like, one, but yeah, I think I do.
I'm going through like a of like blast from the past, like yes, yeah, 100%. Wow, I haven't thought of that in a while. Okay, yes, sorry.
My family had a whole bunch of them, or I'd borrow them from the library and I would just read them and devour them over and over. And it wasn't until I got old enough, I realized these are abridged, so I want to read the big boy version of them. And that just gave me a lot of the accelerant of these are the classic literature was within reach. And then I just read the adult version when I got old enough.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
When was it that you decided like, I'm going to write my first story?
I actually thought that I was going to write nonfiction. Mm-hmm. That was my initial, like, I am going to be a serious author of classical, something that contributes to the way people think. I want to write something on philosophy. But writing is hard. So I decided I would go with something easy, because what could be easier than writing a rom-com? Yeah. And I decided to write my rom-com, and that was going to be my first book, and no one was going to read it because no one wants to read a rom-com written by a man. And I wrote about a character who is dared essentially to write a rom-com. No similarities between persons living in bed. And it was really fun because it gave me an opportunity to play with the meta narrative. But also I discovered in writing that story, Reason and Romance, that I like fiction and I can write it well. And I know what my strengths are. Mm. So that was the first thing that then I wrote One Man's Treasure. It sat on the back burner. Then I wrote and published Prose Procrastination, which is probably my least like competent book, but I'm still proud of elements of it. And then I kind of got in a writing slump, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I tried rewriting Thorn multiple times. And then Men's Fiction Fiction May came up and I was like, I have this idea. And then I wrote Unwanted Passenger, and then it won the contest, and then we were off to the races.
That's amazing. On the topic of that art, writer's block, could you kind of talk about that and how you initially fell into it and how you got out of it? Because I'm sure a lot of our listeners who are in any creative, fields or, you know, hobby endeavor or anything, there's bound to be someone who's kind of experiencing that. So if you don't mind just kind of touching on that for a bit.
Writer's block is difficult because writing is the most wonderful thing in the world. But when you don't know what you're supposed to write, you feel like you're trapped. It is like the worst feeling on earth because you're just staring at a page. You're like, I have the tendrils of what I'm supposed to do, but I can't do it. Or the words just aren't wording. And my two thoughts are, one, you can't edit something you don't write. Even if it's garbage, at least getting something on the page is better than nothing. Thorn, I rewrote 5 times. It was not until the 5th time that I edited that thing to death and was able to draw out the story that became complete. And now I'm ridiculously proud of the story. That said, there's a phrase from Ernest Hemingway said, don't drain the well. If you are pulling on your creativity to the point where there's nothing left to give, you're going to get stuck and you're going to burn out. Always make sure there's something a little extra left in the tank when you end any writing session. The other thing is just find the things that excite you to write. Like there's a book on creativity I read recently that was like, creativity is lightning. It's a storm. It flashes like natural events. Create the conditions that allow that storm to happen.
How do you do that though? Because it seems like it's almost that thing you don't have control over. How do you take control over it? Like what how do you do that? Like, but I get what
asking,
you mean though.
Asking
like,
for a friend.
Where if no one has heard yet, I'm a graphic designer.
I was actually going to ask how do you do that as a graphic designer? Because
I'm so glad you're writing.
I know that there's a like if less I have this outline, I'm just staring at the page and I don't know what I'm supposed to do. As a graphic designer, you can either you might have an idea of what needs to be done, but not know how to get there.
The way that you're describing it is so accurate though. It's and this is what I love about any kind of artistry is that the foundation of it, the product is always going to look different, but the process, you can always find some kind of overlap and a lot of like commonalities between artists, regardless of what kind of art you partake in or craft or whatever you know, design or all that. And the way that you were describing the storm, this idea of like, it struck a chord. And this is why I got so riled up because I was like, but again, like, how do you do that? What, like, because I know what you're talking about where the artist block, you know, with a lot has to do with design is people tell you what you have to do. And then you have to create something that they like based off the things they told you. It's different from the typical artist block of like, I'm creating something for myself to show my audience. This is for somebody else's audience and it needs to please them too. There's this, you know, you're staring at the page and you can draw and doodle and make as many lines and grids and look through 18,000 different typefaces and you can look at 18,000 different color palettes and you're almost oversaturating yourself by trying to force in exactly what you described, pull that creativity out. Because
oversaturizing yourself, is that a graphic design pun?
No, it's not, but actually it's pretty good. Nice. Actually. Yes, it is. It is a graphic design pun. I totally meant to do that. Thank you. But it is unfortunately, like that's the thing is you try to force that creativity. Mm-hmm. You're trying to trigger that storm and it almost negates it because you're not letting that thought happen authentically. And this idea that like creativity is like a well, and there is only so much and you need to let it refill, like there's so much value to that. The way I always kind of looked at it was creativity is always there, but it can only go through, there's like, it's almost like a portal. And sometimes the portal is extra tight and sometimes it's wide open. And you can control how wide the opening is, but only under specific circumstances. Because the creativity is there. You know you're going to get everything you need to create this project. You know it's going to be there. It's on the tip of your tongue. But you don't know what it is yet. And as soon as it hits you, I'm doing a rebrand on my own logo, my own portfolio, and I could not get it right. And just today, I changed one color, that's all it took. And just this well of inspiration came down. And this was right after work. And August was like, oh, we have to go. And I was like, oh, no, but I finally figured it out. I finally figured out what the problem was. Like it was, everything was just happening so naturally and authentically after that. And I'm sure you can relate where it's, once you get into that flow, it's unstoppable until you get to the block. And it's never the same. It's not predictable. It's not like, oh, it's a rainy day. I'm not going to get anything done. It's you can't figure out when the block is going to come down on you, when that opening is going to like get extra double tight to the size of an atom. And that creativity is just there staring you in the face. And you're like, I don't know how to get you out. I know you're there, but I have to figure it out. And it's, I feel like just any artist can relate to this where it's like, I was kind of hoping like, you know, you'd be like, oh, with a writer's block, this is what I do. And I'll be like, oh yeah, let me just take some notes real quick. Like kind of copy paste that.
I will say the thing that I have found that helps me, and that's the thing, it is different for every person because it is what are the things that put you in a relaxed state? What are the things that help you loosen up? It's the same way that a baseball player, if he's too uptight, isn't going to hit the ball right. I think that's the correct sports metaphor. I'm not a sports guy, but
neither are we.
Okay, good.
So we're like, yes, you're
in good company. Sports ball, Calvin ball, anyone? I enjoy doing weightlifting, and that's like one of the. If I don't do that regularly, the ADHD starts to build up in my brain.
Oh.
And I need something to excise that extra energy. Hmm. So I have found things like making sure I'm eating enough food. Like, I know this sounds ridiculously basic, but have enough protein, drink enough water, get outside in nature, and take a walk. Or in my case, I like weightlifting. And you know what? I will be completely honest. My first book was probably written far more with the aid of good old Jack Daniels than not. There is a quote that is misattributed to Ernest Hemingway, which is "Write drunk, edit sober." I do not advocate for that, FYI, but I will say I have found that depending on the circumstances, a little, just a little sip helps me relax in the same way that a good coffee does. Or like I'd go right in a coffee shop. I'd find the things that let me feel in my best spot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love that.
Whatever those little cues are.
I do the same for reading. You know, I have my reading spot, and there are times where I'm not in my reading spot, and it's harder for me to just like get in the zone. You know, my brain will drift, or I'm like, where's my phone? And you know, one thing leads to another, and I'm not reading those 20 pages a day like I was hoping to do. Yeah. You know, I'm a struggling artist, and by struggling, I mean I don't do it enough. I struggle to make the time to contribute to what I want to. And I've encountered that block when I've attempted my own writing stories in the past. And you know, I've got so many that have been, you know, on the back burner for decades. You know, I know where I want to get to, but I don't know how to get there. And then one thing leads to another, life gets in the way, and I never get back to it. I wanted to ask you, do you have any stories like that? You've written stories now, you've published, you got a new one coming out very soon. What has been your favorite story that got left behind?
So there are a handful. I've been in a good spot recently where I've been able to, like with Thorn, I started it, I have my starts, and I've gone through and I've been able to re-edit them. I have a con artist story coming out in April that's going to be like a double with one of the other Veritas authors.
Oh,
and
very cool.
That was a project that sat and stagnated, and finally I just finished it. The story that is currently sitting just in the unfinished category that I really think would be fun to finish, I did start writing the sequel to One Man's Treasure.
Oh.
And the brothers were so much fun. I would love to revisit that world, but honestly, I've got now the other stuff going that I need to write more Mitch Mayhew. So unfortunately, the Hastings boys are just going to end up sitting somewhere in the back corner until eventually there's interest in the 25th anniversary edition or something.
Oh.
And I'll finish it.
That's great. That's great.
Quick question. How much of yourself are you putting into these characters? If you don't mind me asking.
That's a valid question. I would definitely say there's more of myself in my first book than not. Most of my other characters, I've actually joked. There are two different characters that I write. One is a classic Terrence Lehue character, is someone who's emotionally distant, doesn't really like other people, and is unhappy to be in the story, but does it to get back to whatever they want to obsess about.
Cool.
The other character is writing a vague version of my father, apparently.
Oh.
Who is much more of a people person but lacks a degree of self-awareness to the point where they are more Mitch Mayhew-like and just kind of blunt and to the point and just go about their thing.
So you got Sam and Dixon.
Yes.
One Man's Treasure.
All right.
Those are the two default types of characters that I write, apparently.
I find it so interesting. Apparently it's your father, because as a reader, and you know, I don't know you very well. We're getting to meet each other tonight.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
As I was reading it, I just had that thought in my head. I'm like, I feel he's putting himself into Sam quite a bit. But you're saying it's probably your father.
Actually, that's probably more my brother, to be honest.
There you go.
So I have a brother who is much more of that personality type.
Okay.
And that is so a lot of the dynamic between Sam and Dix Hastings in the story come from my brother and I.
Love it. That story was so fresh because I just finished it. I loved the every other chapter, just switching the perspectives. It made it feel so fresh. Every chapter is like, oh, here we go. Oh, here we go. It as a reader, it was very engaging because it's like it was almost like a new story every chapter, but it was the whole story. It was good.
Yeah. I got to say, you came into August's life at the perfect time, because he has just, not just, but like in the past year, Mm-hmm. You've been exploring the pulp genre very deeply. You've really been
diving into it. I've been collecting a lot of Dick Tracy stuff.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
you felt, you. I say you, I mean, your books, your literature, your creations, everything you've made, you fit right in there. And not just mm-hmm. that, you enhance that experience for him. Yeah. And I'm witnessing it firsthand, too.
In general, like my whole life, I've been a sucker for that kind of stuff. I love mm-hmm. my whole life, I've loved Dick Tracy. I've loved The Shadow. And I love The Phantom and The Rocketeer Flash Gordon. And I grew up with a TV serial, or I don't know if it's a TV serial, but a serial that no one ever watched. It was called The Undersea Kingdom with Crash Corrigan. Loved it.
I didn't know about this. Oh, I need to look this up now.
It's on Tubi. but I had it on VHS, and I love that stuff my whole life. So here I am in my 30s, and I think it was last summer. You can correct me if I'm wrong. You know, we in this James Bond community, we are acquainted with Analyze This Mr. Bond, Ryan Holt. Mm-hmm. He was a guest on your show, and you're mm-hmm. talking about The Shadow, and he's sharing the stuff on his Instagram. That's how I discovered Suit Up author. I almost called you Suit Up Bond author.
Which you would.
I keep doing that. Sure. I don't know why I keep doing that.
Totally understand. It made me chuckle.
But yeah, you guys are talking about The Shadow. I'm like, I love The Shadow. And then from there, I was like, your content fits into my interests so snugly. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like I mentioned, you're introducing all these different authors and books and stories. I'm just like, nom, 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 nom. Yeah. Just eat it all up. I'm a fan. What was I going to say, though?
Which is your favorite pulp hero then? Of those, because I reviewed the pulp movies like from the 90s. And I promised the Veritas guys I was going to write an essay on like, this is why most of them did not succeed, but like one did. I'm curious, do you have a favorite of them?
Oh, it's Dick Tracy for sure.
Okay.
I love Dick Tracy. I love the Rogues Gallery of it all. Mm-hmm. I love that 1990 movie to death. Mm-hmm. There's nothing else like it. And I mean, The Shadow is a close second, but I'm more revisiting The Shadow. I grew up mm-hmm. with it. I used to rent it at Ignatium when I was a kid on VHS, but then I don't know. I stopped and I never revisited it until maybe about a year ago. Shortly after your conversation with Ryan, I was like, I got to buy this thing. I got to introduce Margo, novice and nostalgic to The Shadow. And we watched it and it's great. But Dick Tracy is definitely it. And I've always like, you know, even when I was younger, fantasized about almost like an Avengers-esque mm-hmm. tale of, you know, we're forming a team. Dick Tracy, The Shadow, The Phantom, The Rocketeer, mm-hmm. just like all together and like fighting crime. I've always wanted that. But yeah, Dick Tracy is always, I don't know what it is about him, but I think I just wanted to just watch and that was it.
He's one of those fascinating like characters. Like we talk about, we don't get Batman until we have The Shadow, until we have Zorro, until we have the Scarlet Pimpernel. You can kind of start following backwards. It's mm-hmm. so, like, where do we get these archetype characters? Dick Tracy is the super cop. And it's just fascinating because he straddles so many different levels of, he's a super cop. He's also a bit of like that spy espionage thing, especially in the comics from his mm-hmm. era. And it's also very like appealing to a wide range of ages, which I think is instrumental to a character actually taking off.
Yeah. 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 I don't know why I was even like allowed to watch that movie when I was.
Oh, that movie is crazy.
Yeah. It scared like, the hell out of me when I was younger nuts. Too.
I watch it like, I'm pretty certain Madonna is topless right now. Yeah. This is a PG-13 movie in the 90s, right?
Right. Yes, absolutely. I think I watched that a few times with like a pillow placed over my face or something.
Al Pacino is like the most nefarious individual. Might be one of the worst villains of all time in that one too. I don't know.
He was Oscar nominated for that movie, which is incredible. Yeah. And he deserves it.
I was going to say he should have won.
He's so convincing. He's scary.
We like, just did this. Who won that year?
Oh my God, we did just do this.
It was Joe Pesci.
Yeah, yeah.
Joe Pesci won for Goodfellas.
My allegiance to Joe Pesci. I'm sorry. Yeah, I have to.
I don't know. Al Pacino gives his whole damn soul to that.
What does Joe Pesci do?
He's Joe Pesci.
He is that character. He's perfect. I could never say anything bad about Joe Pesci.
Getting back on the rails here. See, we got our anchor points. And our anchor point here is, I do want to touch on, you are coming out with a book here very soon, mm-hmm. Thorn. You have published books in the past. I want to touch on some of like the reality of writing. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, you can have an idea, you can write it, but what about the actual act of getting it out there? Mm-hmm. You know, what are some of the successes? What are some of the tribulations you come across? The highs and lows, if you've encountered them. Mm-hmm. You know, what have been some of your favorite things about getting a work out there? And what have been some of the toughest things about getting a work out there?
So because of the avenues I've picked, I haven't had to worry about query letters yet. I am hoping to work on something that I'm going to try, like getting an agent and getting to a traditional publisher. We'll see if it ever happens, but that's like I'm aware that that is a long, arduous process. So to be clear, that is something I haven't experienced, but am very aware can and will happen. Mm-hmm. The One Man's Treasure was written very quickly after Reason and Romance, but it didn't get published until later because I was going to publish it with a small pulp publisher who took the book, said they were going to write it, they were going to publish it. We had everything vaguely together, other than he never gave me a contract. And then once they said they were going to do it, kept stringing me along, never replied to my emails at a certain point. And eventually I just sent him an email like a year and a half later, mm-hmm. saying, listen, you haven't given me anything to confirm that you're actually going to publish this. You have not signed a contract. I have not signed a contract. I'm taking my book back. And that's when...
Good for you.
I published it when I did, partly because it was after Prose Procrastination came out, and I knew that that was the direction I wanted to go anyway, so it was a good time to pivot. And I knew that it was written early in my writing career, and if I waited too long to write it, it was going to be too far distant from where I currently was at with my writing. Because my skill level... There's that point where it's beginner gains. Like when you first start lifting weights, you can start lifting more weights. And so the number that you start with, the number you end up with in like 2-3 months is a big difference compared to 2-3 months to 2-4 months. That number is going to be a little bit harder to stretch. I felt like my writing was going to continue to... I was close enough to the point where my writing was already getting much better. So I had to get that book out before it was too bad for me to feel comfortable releasing it.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And that was the biggest like tough mark. The successes is I found what I like to write. Mitch Mayhew and these more pulp style shorter books fits within my tastes, and it fits within the taste of readers such as yourselves. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that that's the cool part, is as much as I loved One Man's Treasure, it did not find an audience in the same way Mitch Mayhew has. And Mitch Mayhew has really been doing decent, not like I'm going to retire and move to Fiji, but it continues to sell, which is the cool thing. And more importantly, people seem to like it. And that's just really awesome. Like hearing August, you telling me, I read this book, it fit within my sensibilities. I was like, wow, that means a lot to me as a writer, because it means the book that I wrote found the right person, found someone who has this kind of taste.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's me. I mentioned I try to read, several books a year, and they're more often than not, they get put back down, or, I have my priorities for entertainment, as do we all. I'm a movie guy in general. What was this?
Which book took you like 10 years to read?
Well, I'm still reading it.
Okay, I'm right.
I read the book Dr. Sleep by Stephen King. It took me six years before I finally said the end. But I love that
book. And not because the little dog rant. You know, it's like he reads and then he puts it away, and then he reads and puts it away.
Immediately after, I started reading 11/22/63 by Stephen King. Haven't finished it yet. I go through stretches. I read like 100 pages, and then a year later I'll pick it up again.
But you're saying you like movies in general?
It's not because it's for lack of trying. It's more like, yes, prioritization of entertainment, video games, movies, shows, spending time with this lady here. Yeah.
Always should be a high priority.
Yeah. And when I did decide to pick up a book, it could interest me, but I always was gravitating towards just these big honkers, you know, like Dune or something.
A book that you could kill a man if they broke into your home with.
Yeah. And I mean, truthfully, that was a big selling point of like Unwanted Passenger, because not only is it, you know, it's short and sweet and punchy, but it's a full story and has great characters and great action. And, you know, even just finishing it, it was just like a confidence booster. I'm like, I read a book.
Yeah.
I did it. You know, I've read a few last year, and this is my next question for you is, what has been your favorite book you've read recently? And I'll start other than your writings. I read a book called Alien Flannix. I think I'm pronouncing Flannix right. And it blew me away. And it's alien, like the xenomorph, but set in medieval times. Have you heard of this thing?
That's cool. I have not.
Oh, it is excellent. It was definitely what is it? Don't judge a book by its cover. I judged it and I was like, that looks cool. It's an alien.
That's what a cover is supposed to do.
Exactly. This is when graphic design comes in. They worked really hard on that cover. You should judge it. Just saying.
Yeah. Imagine the xenomorph, but in medieval times. They got swords and shields, and there's creatures that bleed acid. How do you kill these things? It's great. That was my favorite book I read recently.
Immediately looking for it on Audible.
It's amazing.
But for you, how about you? Is there a book that just really tickled your fancy recently?
Book that is coming out that I read a lot for the podcast. And I recently read an advanced reader copy of, it's called Royal Diamonds. And it's just a good old-fashioned adventure story. I really enjoyed that. To pick another book that people can just go out and get now, I'm sure you guys have seen the Tim Burton Batman movies. They came out with John Jackson Miller wrote two sequels to the original Batman movie set within Burton's timeline.
Yeah.
It's called Batman Resurrection and Batman Revolution. Yes. They are amazing. Like, perhaps they might end up being on my top 10 list for the year. They are genuinely just amazing books because I didn't realize how much Batman on page can work well. In this case, it worked so well. It's because it's set in Tim Burton's universe, it feels like you're reading an episode of Batman the Animated Series or even like a pulpy Dick Tracy type book. So, and the audiobook version of it is stunning. Like, I can't recommend that enough.
So this is not a graphic novel. This is a no pictures, no thing.
Print book.
Wow.
I was wanting that book, and it had came out just a year or two ago, and I wanted it so badly. I just never sat down, purchased it or read it. And last year we were visiting her friends in San Francisco, and we were just in their house, and I saw the book. I'm like, I've been wanting to read that. He's like, here you go. You can have it and read it.
Thanks, Chris.
I'm like, what? That's great. So I haven't read it yet, but I do own it. Because it was just a random, like, pass on the love. Like, now it's your turn.
Now it's your turn.
Yes. Yeah. I've been looking forward to that. I have a stack of books. I'm like, I'll read this, then I'll read this, I'll read that. I had it up top, but then Unwanted Passenger.
Thank you. I mean, obviously.
The Shadow then came in, and, you know, it just keeps getting lower and lower.
I do have to say, and this, not to make this about myself or anything, I want to express like how much I've enjoyed seeing August consume your works. I myself have not. I don't want you to think like it's like I'm not interested or anything. So when I say I'm like not good at reading, it that is what it is. Unfortunately, I've always been pretty low on the reader level in general, and I gravitated towards movies and it was a lot more of that kind of media. And I remember loving in Europe, where, you know, I grew up, and I grew up in a European household. We have comic books, but they're not like the American comic books. They're,
yes.
Yeah. They're called bande dessinée, which means drawn strips is the best way is the direct translation. And they're just hardbacks. And they're these extensive series like Tintin. Everybody knows The Adventures of Tintin. And so that's what I grew up with. And I read those all the time as a kid. I had no difficulty reading those, but I wasn't allowed to read them at a certain point because that's all I read. My parents wanted me to read chapter books, and I had such a hard time with that. But when you're looking at, and this is something I used to tell parents when I taught, was use graphic novels and use comic books to for children who might have difficulty with, because for me, it was the sequencing. I have a really, really difficult time even now. If I'm reading a book and they're thinking about something that happened in the past, I don't realize that they're doing that. And I'm very confused. I'm like, wait, I thought they were here. Oh, they're thinking about this. And so when it comes to reading anything that is more pulpy, more, you know, you're doing a lot of jumping back and forth. Like when he was just describing like, oh, you switching perspectives. I would have never picked up on that. I can promise you that now. The amount of books that have done
promise,
that.
I can promise you would.
Okay, you say that, but I have had people tell me so they took like 8 chapters before they realized it was changing.
But it has nothing, in my opinion, it has nothing to do with the way that it's written. It's purely just me. I honestly have a difficult time with that. And it wasn't until, then I just decided not to read. I wasn't allowed to read the comic book, so I never read. I was like, that's just, I'm going on strike. Then the pandemic hit, and my loving husband here, I was starting to get interested in manga, and I used to read One Punch Man. That was the only book series that I watched, that I read, sorry. And I was intrigued in by Dragon Ball Z, and he was like, I will buy you the first, like, I don't know how many volumes, omnibus or whatever you want to call that. He was like, I will buy you this if it means you're gonna start reading Dragon Ball Z. I was like, okay, sounds good.
That's so cool.
Fast forward 6 years later, I mean, I don't know if you can see, but this entire
That's awesome.
If there's a whole shelf, that's all manga, that's all that is. And there's more too. This is just what fit here. Oh my gosh, sorry.
Yeah, we have this little dongle thing that keeps getting unplugged.
But so all this to say, it wasn't until I started reading graphic novels that I realized like this is the issue. I have a really difficult time with sequencing, and when it's drawn out for me, it's just so much easier for me to keep track of. And because it's broken up into these tiny volumes, I can read a full story. I can follow a whole plot, but it does need to be broken up a little bit for me. And I don't think that is the case. I'm not saying that if you read comic books, you suck at reading. Not at all. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if you do have difficulty reading and you find that even in adulthood, because that stuff follows you into adulthood. I'm sorry. I've never been a good reader. C'est la vie. So we find a way to get better. And that's always been my thing. And just, this is my, and selfishly, I'm always like, I would love to see a graphic novel interpretation of your stories. I just think that would be so cool. And also selfishly, so then I can keep up with the narrative and I'm not reading the same sentence over and over again through only my fault. And I will say that. But yeah, so that's something I do need to say to you is, I am very interested in reading your books. I just need to get better at reading first. And then I'm a novice in reading. And I'm not saying this shamefully too. I have never been a good reader, and that is, it sucks, you know, but whatever.
Here, my dad has ADHD and a reading disability. So he can read. It's just, it takes a very long time and the letters move. That's part of why I'm a big audiobook guy, is because my dad had to read when he did school back before audiobooks were normal. His mom would read the book he had to read recorded on tape so he could listen to it and understand it. Then as audiobooks became a thing, my family was immediately like, audiobooks are a thing in our household. Radio dramas are a thing in our household. The Shadow, that's how we got those those cassette tapes.
Amazing.
With the old time radio stuff. And even to today, I'm a huge audiobook junkie. I probably consume 50% of my reading just through audio.
That's awesome.
And it's partly, it does, I don't necessarily have to do that, but I've just, it's so comfortable and familiar and fun for me because it's what's familiar. It's what I grew up with. And I think that's one of the amazing things about how we have the technology we have today, where audiobooks are much more common than they used to be. And I think it's made reading a lot easier for a lot of people. And I'm hopeful, I would love to see comic book versions of my books. My big thing is trying to push to get the Mitch Mayhew stuff on like radio drama. I'd love like a full cast dramatic version of it. But there's just something about a good written comic book. We had Charles R. Dye from Hard Case Crime on the Sue Up podcast a couple of times. And I think it's amazing how the comic book medium gives you so much more to play with in terms of visuals to then go with the story. Because with a film, you're restricted to a budget of what can be seen. Whereas in a comic book, you can literally draw anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on. Should we? I'm like, hold on. Or should we be expecting a Thorn audiobook or any kind of Mitch Mayhew? Your voice? Come on.
I've actually really considered the Mitch Mayhew one because it's short enough. I think Unwanted Passenger could be pretty easy. I will tell you this. As you guys know from editing audio, audio is a laborious... If getting exact diction is a laborious process.
I didn't even think of that.
So we shall see how well it goes. I think that I can read fine and pronounce words perfectly until I have to record myself. And then we have like the same 10 minutes at the beginning of the book getting recorded again and again and again.
Yeah.
I heard a review or read a review of your book, and someone said it like they read it like it was a movie. They could like see it as a film. And when I was reading Unwanted Passenger, I'm a theater guy. Mm-hmm. And I do some acting here and there. I'm an actor. Did you know?
Yeah. I'm a graphic designer. You're an author, sir.
Yeah, you're an author. Do you know that? I was like, how could I make this into a play? How could I adapt Unwanted Passenger into a stage play? Oh, I kept doing that while I was reading. Then I read Diamonds in Denver. I'm like, I don't think that would be a stage play. You up the ante in that one. But maybe so, with a bigger budget. Yeah, go ahead.
I just have to tell you, the thing I'm excited about, I'll be very curious to hear what you think if when you read this. So the con man story that I'm finishing, part of the premise is that the con artist, he has aspirations of, he's a playwright. And he's like, I am an excellent con artist because I know how to tell a story. And so he weaves in little suggestions of that here and there throughout the story. So I'll be curious what you think of it when it is.
Oh, yes,
I will look forward to reading that. I was looking forward to talking with you tonight to pick your brain about writing in general, like your successes and, you know, some of the tribulations, but also just touch on, like, you know, when you do have that writer's block, how do you navigate that, navigating inspirations? Because I have dabbled with writing. I am writing something now, and it's been the most successful writing I've accomplished, as in I'm actually doing it.
Yes.
And it is a play, and it's coming along pretty well. I'm almost done with, I'll say, draft one. But taking what we talked about tonight, I will definitely keep that in my heart, my head, my back pocket. And I think my favorite thing I heard was, you can't edit what you haven't written yet.
I love that.
That can be for anything, not just writing.
Is
anything.
That a Terrence original?
That is not. Can't remember who I pulled it from. The other thing that I will leave you with as far as writing goes is, this is something that I personally struggle with when I'm writing, because I always compare my first draft with a finished product. You can't. Hemingway, this is a direct Hemingway quote, the first draft of everything is shit. And when you accept that the first draft is going to be ugly, it gives you the space to keep working on it, instead of feeling like, but it's not perfect the first time I put it out there. It won't be. And that's okay, because that's the process.
Ah, it's lovely.
Keep that in your back pocket, kids. Don't be discouraged. Yeah. You know? Yeah, that is great advice. Thanks, Hemingway.
Yeah.
You know, between bouts of depression and alcohol, he really did have some good stuff to say and write.
He edited sober.
Oh, and failed marriages.
Yeah.
There you go.
Turns out he was a pretty swell guy, you know?
I have, as we're coming to a close here, yeah. I do have a fun question to ask you.
Yes.
And it's, you know, we are a James Bond themed podcast, so I'd be remiss if I didn't sprinkle in some Bond.
I think this is the longest I have gone talking to other Bond fans without directly having a conversation about James Bond. So
wow.
I'm not certain if I should say thank you or not, but it really has been fascinating. Like,
yeah.
We've had a really good conversation. I kind of forgot we're a James Bond podcast for a second. I was like, what do we do?
We're writing podcasts.
Yeah, we changed everything now.
Now, my question is, just because we got to squeeze some James Bond in here. Let's say you have a Mitch Mayhew story. Okay. Mitch and Kathleen are on, or they're taking a break. They're having a fight. They're taking a break. Mitch goes for a flight. He goes through the Bermuda Triangle and he gets sucked into a wormhole. And, you know, he goes into an alternate timeline and he's in a James Bond story. We'll say the films. Which one do you think Mitch Mayhew would thrive in the most? Which one would he fit in the most?
That's a good question.
That's a great question.
On the fly. Give me an answer now.
On the fly. I feel like the man with the golden gun would actually be the one that he would thrive the most in, because I would almost say Dr. No to a certain extent, but that's also because it's the oldest. I think that the man with the golden gun, there's already an airplane, even though it gets blown up, which would be classic for Mitch. And it just, it's so bonkers to a certain degree that I think Mitch Mayhew would just kind of wander in, light a cigarette, and just ask where he's supposed to fly. And I feel like he'd have the most fun in that particular one.
It would be cool, especially in that finale, to see, you know, your portrayal of Mitch Mayhew against a like trained assassin, and then, you know, going off into that funhouse maze at the end of the finale.
Oh, he'd 100% get shot. He just may not die.
Be like, oh, scared by his own reflection, like, who are you?
He'd be punching the glass.
I'm joking. I don't know what I'm talking about.
No. It's very likely. I imagine Mitch Mayhew in the funhouse would be a very fun thing. Like, that's the kind of thing I think it actually would be a great set piece to include in a future Mitch Mayhew.
Mm-hmm.
I will give you guys this exclusive like tease. I'm working on season 2. So I'm working on the final Mitch Mayhew, because there's short books. I'm trying to call them like seasons because they're written like a serial.
Cool.
Season 2, I'm going to try making my Moonraker. Ooh. And we'll see how accurate, how well I'm able to synthesize and not feel like I'm just regurgitating Moonraker.
Nice.
Okay.
Nice.
Well, thank you for that snippet. I love that.
I'm bringing it back to the original synthesized comment you made earlier in this episode. Very cool.
Where I would put
Mitch. Yes, no, I'm like, genuinely curious.
Now my answer.
Back to me. Well, you know, I was thinking about it, and the milk and cookies answer would be, I think, from Russia with Love.
Yeah.
I could see him being like snugged right in there. He's got to find this Lecter. Mm-hmm. There's this girl who falls in love with him just from his picture, and he's fighting Red Grant on a train. Like, it seems like a really nice, snug fit. I would find it fascinating him in something like Live and Let Die, where he's like going off against like voodoo elements, something very bizarre. And then I did, you know, when I was thinking of this question, I kept going to You Only Live Twice, just because selfishly I was like, Japan's just such a cool setting.
Yeah. So
just put him in Japan and maybe he'd, you know, pull off a better Japanese disguise than Sean Connery did. Maybe. It's a little spicy.
It's spicy.
I love From Rush with Love as the comment, because again, I'll give you guys the tease. The third Mitch Mayhew story that I'm working on now opens on a train.
Okay.
Cozy.
Cozy.
Very cool.
I love it. I love it. And once again, thank you for being here on A Good Squeeze.
Thank you.
We're truly honored to have you here. As a thank you, I would like to honor you with a cocktail, if you would be so gracious to say yes. I would love to curate the suit up cocktail.
Suit up Bond author cocktail.
Suit up Bond
author cocktail.
Whoops.
Please make that the official title.
I'm drinking it tonight.
Okay.
And I think we have a winner. This is it.
And it will be revealed on our Instagram. We will be connecting with you on that one.
But thank you, Terrence. And, you know, for those who are listening now or later, pick up Thorn whenever it comes out. Where can the people find you? Where can the people find your books to purchase?
To purchase, definitely. The easiest thing to do is go onto Amazon, because the Amazon overlords have access to everything. So paperback, Kindle, It's there. You can also DM me on Instagram if you want a signed personal copy of any of my books. And you can follow me by going to @suitup.author on Instagram, or go to my website, terrencelayhew.com. Also, subscribe to Suit Up with Terrence Lehew. And if you aren't already, definitely subscribe to A Good Squeeze, because this is a good podcast. Yeah. And you two are delightful. And I picked out this tie specifically because I want to match. I felt like it matched the sense of like whimsy and design that you guys have.
Oh, thank you. I don't have my glasses on, but if I squint, I can see it. That's wonderful. And it's not about us. It's about you. It's enough with the flattery. My goodness. It's been absolutely wonderful having you on. Everybody, like I said, anybody who's here on our podcast knows about you already, but if you haven't, give him a follow, give him a like, give him everything that you've got, give him your firstborn. Go for it.
Thank you, Terrence. And with that, hey, if you're listening to us, you can find us wherever you're listening to us. We're also on Instagram,
and only Instagram.
That's right. But we're as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts, for sure. But until next time, I'm August.
I'm Margo.
And this has been A Good Squeeze.